treating me right. Hello, St. Louis and surrounding areas. You are listening to another edition of At Your Service, heard right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Yeah, I'm in a great mood now. Anytime you start with a little REO Speedwagon, the locally famous band, I am pumped up and ready to go. Oh, by the way, who is this? That's me. It's Dave Simons, certified financial planner, partner and managing director of One Private Wealth. That's the day job, the one that puts food on the table and pays the bills and buys my wife her 4,000 pairs of shoes. Okay, I can't be a hypocrite. If you saw all the racing bikes in my garage and all my running shoes, okay, it's all even. But that's the day job that pays for all that kind of stuff. Occasionally at night, when I'm not home watching Netflix documentaries or sports or playing my guitar or practicing my Chinese, yes, my Mandarin, I occasionally am let out to play, and I come down here, like I was last Tuesday to host At Your Service, and here I am, straight downtown to do it again, and loving every minute of it. So, welcome, everybody. So let me ask you a question as we start here. Are you ready? Not for this show, necessarily. No, are you ready? 3 weeks from today. Have you done the math? Do you know what's going on? 3 weeks. We are finally here. Man, I never thought we'd finally get here. 504 hours. So let me get very specific. 504 hours at this very moment. It will be 8:08 Central Time, St. Louis time, on Tuesday, November 5th. Election Day, of course. And just about most of you, I would say, at this very moment, 504 hours from now, will be tuned in somewhere, either to the television, you're driving around perhaps listening to the radio, some of the news programs. I know the younger generation might actually be looking at stuff on their phone related to the election if they care to vote. But most of America is going to be tuned in some way, fashion, or another to see what the heck is going on. I've been voting since 1980. I know a lot of you have been voting a lot longer than that, but that's 44 years for me. So I've seen a lot. This is the craziest year ever in my life, and I would venture to say one of the crazier campaign years ever. If none of the crazy stuff that happened this summer never occurred, it would still be kind of one for the ages. I mean, but what happened, it's almost like, and we've been actually going through this, 2016, 2020, now 24. It's almost like this year looked at 2016 and 20 and said, hold my beer. Watch this. So it kind of really went in a different direction off the rails. I think we can all agree in that debate in late June. The whole country, even Democrats, even people who couldn't wait to vote for Joe Biden, knew he's not quite right. He's better than that guy. I'm certainly not going to vote for him. I wish maybe we had another Democrat, but Joe Biden is the guy, and that's who I'm going to vote for. So even folks who are listening right now that you would describe yourself that way, you have to admit, from the moment President Biden walked onto the stage, it was not going to go well. That was a crazy performance. I was actually out of town. I was in Colorado on kind of a business pleasure trip, and I was watching that in my hotel room, and I could just tell right away as he walked out, oh, man, he doesn't look good. Well, we now know what happened, of course, after a lot of pressure from the Democratic power structure. Look, once you have Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama say, Joe, you got to step aside, Jill Biden didn't have any more power at that point. If that was the only thing, you'd say, wow, this is a crazy year. Oh, yeah, we then have an assassination attempt. It wasn't just any assassination attempt. No, you had a former president, current candidate, get grazed in by a bullet by the ear. When he gets up, blood streaked across his face, he puts his fist in the air and he's yelling, fight, fight, fight. You know, there are conspiracy theories on both sides, and it's funny. that particular event. You had those on the far left, the conspiracy theories over there. Oh, it was all staged. There's no way that you could have had some random picture like that of Donald Trump getting up with blood across his face and he's doing fight, fight, fight. And the Secret Service just happened to kind of surround him to make sure they got the shot. I mean, that's the kind of craziness this world is, that people actually believe that that was staged. But then again, it's almost like the wacky far right said, oh, you want to know what's crazy? No, that was planned. We just got lucky. No, that the CIA was behind that, and they let it happen. I mean, this is the kind of country we are in right now. And I'd like to say I can't wait until this is over in 3 weeks. But it's unfortunately probably not going to be over in 3 weeks. Donald Trump himself has even said, in so many ways, he's not going to accept the loss. It's going to be rigged if he loses. So expect this to be tied up in the court system for some time. I'm not saying that Kamala Harris is going and her supporters are going to accept a loss either. It really depends on how tight it is in the so-called swing states. Look, they have a right. By the way, both sides have a legal constitutional right to have recounts in any state where you have a very small gap in return, the performance between the two. We saw that in 2000, didn't we? Down in Florida. And we know that Al Gore won the popular vote, but of course in this country that doesn't matter. It's the Electoral College, and it came down to Florida. That was the final state. And Bush initially had been declared the winner, but as Al Gore had the right, because it was separated by literally just a few thousand votes, to do a recount. And then we got that phrase in our American lexicon of the hanging chads. Remember that 24 years ago? There was a 5-week gap. Did a little research on this as the financial guy to try to remember what the market did, because this is the most common question that I'm getting right now is, Dave, what's going to happen if we don't have a declared winner, not just for a couple of days, but for weeks or for months? And I said, you know what? We don't have a lot of precedence on that historically, but we do sort of somewhat recently, 24 years ago, where we did not have a declared winner for 5 weeks. And you would think the financial markets would not like that, and particularly the stock market. So from the very next day after the election, the S&P 500, at its worst, fell about 8.4%. That's not terrible. This isn't a crash. It's not even a correction. But by the time we got to that day when the Supreme Court finally stepped in and said, guys, it's over, okay, we're not going to rule on this, we give it back to Florida, which ultimately gave George W. the victory. By that day, the market was down only a little bit more than 4% since the election. Now, can we compare this to back then? Not really. Probably not. This one could be much more vitriolic because, unfortunately, our country's in a different, and I dare I say, darker place than it was back in 2000. We simply don't know. All we know right now is virtually every poll shows it a dead heat, a statistical dead heat. And if you're like me, you go day to day. I'll hear something or I'll see something, read something, and I go, I think Kamala Harris is probably going to squeak by. I don't know. I look at this. And then the next day, I'll look at something different or I'll watch something else and I'll go, oh, you know what? No, I'm kind of doing the math here. I think Trump's going to win this thing. I cannot seem to make up my mind. So why do it? I mean, it's going to go down to the wire. This could turn out to be one of the historically closest elections of all time. And it really will get down not just to a state or two, but they're going to narrow it down to like that county. That one county in Ohio is what did it. That one small little county in Pennsylvania, if that had just turned, that would have done the whole election. That's how close it is. I don't talk a lot of politics on this show, and I certainly don't take personal sides. I like to be a little bit of an equal opportunity antagonist so people don't get mad at me. Well, you just went against that side. Well, I kind of did that to the other side, too. I think the extremes on both sides are wacky. And it will be, as usual, more of that big middle, that center right, center left that will probably decide. Now, when we come back, I want to explore one thing that's very intriguing to me, and I never thought about this. We know that when we look at genders and we look at where people live, rural versus urban, we look at all these things and we see big differences in people who they vote for and what sides, Democrat, Republicans. But one thing in particular, it's always been lingering out there, election after election. But one study has shown this more than anything could be the deciding factor. And it's not any of the aforementioned differences we have. I'll come back after this break and explain it. You're listening to At Your Service. Dave Simon's filling in. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 8:22 in St. Louis, talking a little politics, not personal politics. I will never do that. But obviously, we have to address what's right in front of us as we are on the cusp of this thing, on the eve almost, 3 weeks from today, or roughly about 500 hours or so. Again, just personal opinion. I don't know. Maybe we'll all be surprised and somehow we'll find out even that night or at the latest the next morning, and a winner has been declared and the other candidate says, yeah, can't really argue with that. I concede. Okay, I'm living in fantasy land. It doesn't seem like it's going to be set up that way, but we can always hope. But it just, that would be the cherry on top of the wildest election year in my lifetime, certainly, to not have this thing end after November 5th and have it drug out. And America's just going, can we just get through this and move on? But even there, it's just going to be more chaos. And I'm not a negative person. I'm very optimistic. Look, let me be very, very clear. And I know some of you are going to disagree with this because you look at the other side. Whatever side you're on, you look at the other side and say, if that person wins, America's over. I hear that all the time. What I do for a living in financial management, I have to be as unbiased as I can. I cannot, and I have very strong personal feelings on one side of the politics. I really do. I have one side that I think is right and one side that I think is wrong. But I would like to think I have the humility to know I could be wrong on some of that. And in fact, I know I am on some of this, that maybe the country's better off in some of the things that I don't really like. I've always been able to have an open mind about that. So even when I come here occasionally and fill in and talk some politics, I have no problem being that equal opportunity antagonist here. And so as I look ahead in the 4 years, no matter who wins, let me be very clear. This country will survive. This country, 4 years from now, is still going to be the strongest, most powerful country in the world, the one that everybody still looks up to, the most charitable. I am convinced of that. I am an historian. I get that from my father, who is actually a PhD college professor in American history. I grew up with it. If you think it's bad now and you think this is one of the worst and you question how we can ever survive, and if you really believe if the other person is going to win, that is the death of America, then you do not know American history. We've had worse times. Could there have been a worse time than the Civil War? I just read two books recently, back to back. In fact, you should really read the one on Eric Larson that talks about the days leading up to the firing upon Fort Sumter in South Carolina that really got the ball rolling, and it was the beginning of the Civil War. And when you read what was being said and what was happening, there is no way in the world you could have ever predicted that we would be here today in 2024 as the greatest country in the world. You wouldn't believe it. That's, you talk about divisiveness, when you have 600,000 Americans die fighting each other, brother fighting brother. But it wasn't just that either. How many of us have parents or grandparents who went through the Great Depression, and how we survived. This country survived that. Of course, the entire globe went through one. But that also spawned communist clubs. Right before that, the KKK in the 19-teens and 1920s was growing again. We still had Jim Crow, obviously well into the 50s and into the 60s. Speaking of the 1960s, I was a kid. I don't really remember this, but I certainly know that if you were an adult or you were older in the 1960s, you thought this could be the end. The Vietnam War was one thing, but when you had riots in the streets, when you had the 1968 Democrat convention fiasco and riot there on live television, and you did have the Vietnam War and you had all of this going on, you didn't know that this country could potentially survive, and we did. And we prospered, because what happens in this country is it's a pendulum. And if you are fearful that the other side is going to win, and that side even gets half of what they want, I'm telling you, the center will hold the majority of this country and say, we don't want that anymore, and it will swing back. It happens every time. Be careful what you wish for if you're one on the extreme side, because the rest of the country is going to turn on you, maybe as soon as the midterm elections. You may not even have to wait 4 years. I'm telling you, And I could give specific examples whether Harris wins, and if she gets this in place, the rest of America will look at it and go, no way. I might even be on the left side of things and a Democrat, but that's a bridge too far. And same on the right. If Trump gets some of the stuff that he really wants and some of the rhetoric that he puts out there, and it really does come to fruition, middle America will hold. In fact, even people who voted for Trump will say, wow, I didn't actually think he would even try that. That's a bridge too far. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm telling you, I feel it in my bones. America is going to survive the next 4 years. Do not let the people who are trying to sell you something, because that's really what it is. They're trying to sell you anger. They're trying to sell you perhaps even their books and their newsletters and their videos. And they're selling fear. And they're selling divisiveness, and they're turning American against American because they profit from that. And also, don't be played by our adversaries who are looking back and loving this and licking their chops, because we know for a fact they are very much involved in the social media landscape here in the U.S. We know that. They get involved in the chat rooms. It's not even necessarily an American who is coming up with all these conspiracy theories and getting people riled up, like FEMA in North Carolina is stealing food and packages. So the poor folks who have been flooded out of their homes and trying anything just to survive is somehow this deep state cabal attacking these FEMA people or FEMA itself. And now they've even arrested a North Carolina guy who's in his truck driving around with guns ready to take some FEMA people out. Who says that that conspiracy is even being started by us? We don't know that. You're being played. We will get through this. And I know if you're on the losing side, and I might be on the losing side here in a few weeks, but I'm going to wake up the next day and I will pray to my God that we will get through this as a country, and I will pray for internal peace and just let me make a difference in my corner of the world and know that. Look, I just got back from a trip through the Southeast. Some of that time, I was lucky. I spent a couple hours on a beach, and I talked to a lot of people walking their dogs. I have no idea what their politics were. I went to a little small convention here in St. Louis today, hundreds of people. There could be all different walks of life. And when they go into the voting booth, some are going to vote for Donald Trump, and some will vote for Kamala Harris. But you wouldn't know that, because when we're together and we're talking about other things, I truly believe that most Americans kind of want the same thing. We just want peace. We want to love our family. We want to get along with our neighbor. We want to keep our jobs. Unfortunately, too many of us will watch television all day and all night on one side and get all riled up and buy into all the anger. So I would encourage you to just step aside. Get away from it. And go talk to your neighbors and get out of the streets and into the community and go to the grocery store and to go to Walmart, go to the library, go to church, go to wherever. But don't talk politics. And you'll find that people, for the most part, are really good. They're friendly. I know there are extremists among us who are very hateful. We saw some of that on January 6th. No, not everybody, but some of them, yes, were willing to do battle and with weapons if they had the chance. But they are such a small number. Don't believe that that's most Americans. And I say that for people over on the left that we see who loot downtown businesses and set fires. That is such a small minority. That doesn't define an entire party. Neither side does. The middle will hold. America will still be America 2 years and 4 years from now. And I'm telling you, we're going to look back at this rather dark time in our history, but not nearly as dark and as bad as other eras in our long, rich history. And we survived. We'll be right back. All right, folks, welcome back. Dave Simons filling in at your service tonight. Look, I always come into the show here, like I do with my Dollars and Cents show when I host it on a Sunday afternoon from time to time, with my notes in front of me. I never write anything out. I have the gift of gab. I can just take a couple of sentences and I can talk for 12 minutes on it. I will tell you what I just did in the last segment. I didn't have on any sheet of paper. I was not prepared for that. I don't know where that came from. That's not always like me to just kind of get on the soapbox. And I kind of got into that zone, but I hope you could hear my heart from it. I'm not trying to offend anybody. That's not my goal. I know a lot of people in these days of hot takes and everyone's trying to yell louder than the next guy. That is not my style. I can't stand that kind of stuff. I won't listen to a radio show or watch a TV show that engages in that kind of new conversation. And I hope it didn't come off that. I just love this country so much. And as someone who understands the history of this country and how divided it has been, from especially in some of the past instances that I described in the last segment, and we came through and we survived. And like I said before, it's that we just kind of come back to the middle and then go to the other side. Sometimes it happens very quickly, that pendulum. Other times it can take years, if not decades, to get over to the other side. But eventually it does come back the other way. And we will look back. 62 years old, I hope I live to be 95 to 100 years old, as long as I know where I am. As long as I can still walk and feed myself. But I'll look back here in 2024 and say, yeah, we came through it again. And it wasn't great. And we were yelling at each other. And we figured out a way to get through it. And we all learned that social media, and it's still around. It, you know, who knows what it's going to look like 20 years from now. But somehow we'll find a way to navigate it. We always do. Okay, enough of that. I really had something else planned that I want to talk about. And I even teased it a couple of segments ago, and that is this interesting, research or paper that was written by a political strategist, a guy by the name of Doug Sosnick, and I really found this intriguing. Look, we all know about how people vote. You can start to classify people, whether by gender or race or region or wherever, and you can say, okay, this area, they tend to vote that way, and it's all true. But he's making the case that kind of the new king, the new big, I guess, indicator of how people are going to vote is your education. Now, that's always been that way to some degree, but nothing like we're seeing in the last couple of elections and certainly here in 2024. And as Sosnick writes here, and I'm quoting, "The biggest single best predictor of how someone's going to vote in American politics today is education level. That is now the new fault line in American politics." And as he writes, "Trump's rise over the past three election cycles accelerated and completed this political realignment based on education that had been forming since the early 70s. At the beginning of the decline in the middle class," end quote. Now, that's very, very interesting and I think somewhat insightful. So it started small. We didn't really notice it. It was quite subtle. But here we are decades later, and as he points out, it is front and center. And he goes on, "There is a rift between the people who attain higher education, that's become the basic Democratic Party, and we compare them with people who feel left behind. And that group of voters is now the modern Republican Party base. Now, I know he's generalizing. Of course, there are exceptions. Some of you are highly educated and have all kinds of titles after your name, and you're ensconced within the GOP, and you cannot wait to vote for Donald Trump. We get that. On the other side, there are people who are not highly educated and may not even have a GED. And yet you can't wait to get into the voting booth and say, I'm all for Kamala Harris. So, yeah, not everybody's going to fit into this. But in general, I think he's exactly right. And I think he's onto something. And I say it for this reason. He points out that in the battleground states, and let's go back and review some of our homework here, boys and girls. What are the seven states that are deemed the swing states? They are Pennsylvania, Arizona, Nevada, Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina, Georgia. All right, those are the seven. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but Missouri and Illinois, we pretty much know where the electoral votes are going to go. Doesn't matter if you're in one of the two states and you go in and you pull the lever or click the box or whatever, Trump, Harris, Missouri's a red state. And it would be next to impossible for all of a sudden Harris to win the electoral votes. I'm not saying don't vote. Absolutely go vote, because it's just not one race, of course, right? Got all the other important down ballot issues and constitutional amendments and all this other stuff. But it's pretty well a given at the very top of the ticket. Electoral votes for Missouri will most likely, highly likely, go for Trump, and over in Illinois, the blue state, they will go for Harris. These two states, will not be the deciding factor in the final outcome. All the people who watch this, and they're all in agreement, Democrat pollsters, Republican pollsters, and some who say we're nonpartisan, all of them agreed. Those basically are the seven states that they're called purple states. They're not really one or the other. They might have been in past generations, but as we stand here today, they are right on the line. And this is what Sosnick says about education. This is interesting. Six of the seven states, also when it comes to education, are split down the middle between those who are college educated and those who are not. Do you get that? Do you see that? You see the link I'm making? This guy, this political strategist, this pollster, that's what his career is. When he says the biggest deciding factor here in 2024 is education, and oh, by the way, six of the seven swing states that will decide it are the only states that are basically right down the middle between college educated and non-college educated. The only exception of the seven happens to be the state with the fewest electoral votes at stake, so it's almost like it doesn't matter, but that's Nevada. Nevada has one of the lower levels of college-educated population in the country, Nevada. And so you would think because of that, it would go more Republican. So before the show, I went and looked at it a little bit more. I'm thinking, wasn't Nevada, though, wasn't that kind of a red state? Yeah, it was in elections from the past. But if you look at recent elections, it really is purple. It is close. It is very close. But the other six that will really decide it. So I thought that was very, very fascinating. And I think we're on to something here, and it's really flipped. You had a lot of your, shall we say, more uneducated people that were back when we were more of an agrarian society, more of the farming community, the rural community. A lot of them really did tend to go more on the Democrat side. And you had the so-called elites and things were more on the Republican side. You still have some of that, but isn't it interesting that there's been a bit of a switch? Now, so-called elitism seems to be more over on the left side, the highly educated, where you now have a lot of the rural folks who might get their GED or high school and say, that's it. They tend to be more Republican. Or is it that they're just more Trump? That's going to be very interesting to see if there's a drop off when the era of Trump inevitably starts to end. I promise we're not talking politics for the full 2 hours, all right, my friends? You know, I do financial management for a living. So when I fill in for At Your Service, I like to also bring that into the discussion. So just like last Tuesday, I saved that for the entire second hour. I know a lot of you have a great deal of interest. And one of the questions that you might have is, what about the election? And then, okay, you want to talk about Wall Street. You want to talk about investing in the markets. How will that impact anything? All right, let's take a look at that. We'll discuss some of that also in the second hour as well. So we've got a lot on the agenda still before I sign off at 10 o'clock. But right now, I've got to sign off this microphone and go to a commercial paid break. So stay with us. Dave Simon's filling in At Your Service. We'll be right back. Welcome back, my friends, to the show that, well, it does end, I promise, at 10 o'clock St. Louis time. Dave Simons, certified financial planner and just all-round nice guy, I promise. We're just sitting here watching sports and Blues game, of course, the baseball game, and I just thought about Mizzou playing at home at Auburn. You know, I'm bacheloring it this weekend as my wife will be out of town, and as a Mizzou grad and lifelong huge Tiger fan, and I haven't been to a game yet this year. I was supposed to go to the Oklahoma game, but I had to cancel that, unfortunately. So the only other opportunity that I have, looking at the final schedule, is to get up there this Saturday against Auburn for the 11 a.m. game. And I'm one of those people who has no problem doing things by myself. I'm weird that way, I guess. In fact, two nights ago, I went to the movie theater by myself. I do that a lot, and saw the new movie about Saturday Night Live. Let me tell you, those of you of my generation, and maybe even a little younger, a little bit older, who grew up in those early days, you will absolutely love that movie. I had no expectations of it. I just thought, well, this would be interesting. I'm more of a documentary guy, and I was hoping, it's not a documentary on Saturday Night Live, the first show. It's a movie? Oh, okay. How they find these people in central casting who not only kind of look like Dan Aykroyd and Chevy Chase and John Belushi, and the guy who they get to play George Carlin, who was on the first Saturday Night Live, who sort of looks like him, I think pretty well, but sounds just like him. It's incredible to me. You can't be a prude, though. I mean, if you don't like the F-bomb and you don't like some other things, that might be a hard hour 45 to sit through. But, you know, it's hard to go to a movie these days and not get some of that, and especially if it's Saturday Night Live. But I found it thoroughly entertaining. So for me, if it's a 5-star thing, it's 4.5 stars. I loved it. But in terms of the Mizzou game, I have no problem going up there by myself and just buying one ticket. I haven't bought it yet. I went online. I looked. Yeah, it would cost me a pretty penny. I'm spoiled. I don't like to go up and sit in the nosebleed seats. I know it's a lot cheaper. I'll do it occasionally, especially if I'm with some other folks. But if it's just me, I'll pay a few extra bucks to do it. The only problem is, to come back, and then my son bought these comedy show tickets for Saturday night. So I'm thinking, gosh, I drive up to Columbia, I go to the game, sit there for about 3 hours, I get back here to St. Louis, what's it going to be, 3:30, 4 o'clock, maybe, something like that, and then turn right back around, and then, you know, I'd like to think I'm in pretty good shape, but I think I might get tired. I don't know. I'm just kind of talking to myself. We shall see. All right, folks, when we come back in the second hour, I am going to start talking a little bit about the markets and financial stuff. I'm telling you, let me just ask a question to kind of set it off here. Does the market go down anymore? I'm serious. That's not even a joke. This year is incredible in terms of the strength and the consistency. Now, true contrarians, which I tend to be, will look at that and instead of having a lot of joy and saying, this is great, we're all making more money, which is true. But I admit, you just kind of wince a little bit and go, well, it's almost too perfect here. And it just can't keep going up almost every day. Now, today, obviously, the Dow went down a few thousand. That would be a bad day. A few hundred points. and all the major markets were down. But, you know, we've only had one down month this year. One of these days, I'm going to have to go back and do some research on this. I'm pretty sure there has never been a year where the market was up every month. All 12 months, the market never had one down month. I would be very surprised if that's ever happened. Even that 95 to 99 period, which to this day is still the best five-year return in the history of the stock market, had down months during each of those calendar years. We've only had one this year, and that was back in April. So we got up to a good start in the first quarter of this year, gave a little bit of that back in April, and the market's done nothing but kind of edge up. Now, yeah, it's gone down like late July, early August. People started to get nervous. The market was falling, but came back up, posted an up month in August. And we've just continued to ride this train straight up. There's the inevitable correction out there at some place and somehow and somewhere, and something will cause it. But so far, so good. So we'll dig into that a little bit more, what's going on, what we need to know, and what we can learn from all this. So thank you for tuning in the first hour. We'll be back with much more in the second hour here on At Your Service.